Yes, I like to shop. Don't we all like to shop?
Yeah.
Women do. Mm-hmm. I know guys don't really like to shop.
Not as much. We kind of get in and out. And yeah, that's
exactly. Like, you're in and out.
Hi, it's mid-December. It's the retail season. Welcome to the Work Show.
Catskill, New York. I started April 1st. I actually opened up April Fool's Day. Okay. April 1st, it'll be 5 years in April.
Tina Gagliardi started Mahalo about 8-9 years ago on Main Street in Catskill. It's moved down a few doors. It's the biggest thing going on its stretch of Main Street. We stopped in to see how things are going this season.
When I decided to open the store, I said, should I name it after myself? Should I do, you know, and she says, well, you liked the word mahalo. And we looked it up, and it's actually a well-wishing. It means may you be in divine breath. That's the literal translation from, you know, the old Hawaiian language. They use it as thank you. And it's on all of their garbage pails when you're going down the street. Uh-huh. My girlfriend was just in Hawaii, and she took pictures. And all the way down the street on the thing, it said, mahalo, mahalo, mahalo. Uh-huh. So, but it's a well-wishing. But it's just, I thought it was a nice, friendly word. And I always knew that I wanted to open up my own business. And I was listening to The Secret, those CDs, The Secret. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically I thought there's no time like the present because I had known a couple people that passed away. And I thought, you know what? I mean, my dream has always been to open up a gift shop. Why not now? Mm-hmm. So I'm living the dream.
And how did you start off then? Did you have to find investors or did you find...
No. My boyfriend owns the liquor store, the wine cellar. Uh-huh. And I said to him, you might need to support me for the first year or so. And, you know, he said, yeah, no problem. Do what you got to do, you know. Do what you love and love what you do. So I was working for Cisco Foods at the time. And my last day was January 31st. I turned in my computer at 7 o'clock that night, and the following morning I was down at the Jacob Javits Center for the New York International Gift Show. Uh-huh. And I just went for it.
I bet that was exciting.
Oh my goodness. I was so overwhelmed. When I walked in there, I never expected there were four floors of, you know, 12 by 12 foot rooms of every gift you could possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. Vendors from all over the world. The whole fourth floor was dedicated to handmade, which is kind of where I stuck because we have a lot of local artists that do their work, and I can proudly say that I'm able to sell their things for them. We have probably about six or seven local artists that do work for us.
Mm-hmm. How close did you come to matching your customer base in terms of what you had bought?
You know, I'm from Catskill.
Yeah.
I know the price point. So I basically stayed. I wanted to get $10 gifts that were nice, $20 gifts that were nice, $30 gifts, $40. You know, I wanted to stay under $50 to $60. Mm-hmm. Because I'm from here, and I know that, you know, you want to get something nice and affordable. And I also like to shop, so I always thought to myself, hi, Trina. Thank you. You brought me bills, Trina. Not happy about that. So I tried to stay under an affordable price point because also when I shop, I like to buy myself a little something as well. So I thought to myself, well, let me get something affordable. And you know, it's funny. People will spend the extra money on a gift for somebody. They'll spend a little bit less money and get themselves something also. And it's affordable. You can do that. You can pick yourself up something or see something that you like and buy it while you're also shopping for a gift.
And give me a little bit of kind of your background. So were you born in Catskill? Or?
Born and raised in Catskill. My parents had their own printing press. They were in business for themselves. They owned the E&G Press on Hill Street. My father was in business for himself for 40 years about. So I've always wanted to own my own business. Mm-hmm. And when I went to college, I went to school for accounting. And I worked for an accountant for a summer, and I thought, well, this is boring. Uh-huh. It's okay, but it's boring. So so I bartended and waitressed my way through college. I went to Marist and still liked the bookkeeping end of it. So, mm-hmm. you know, so I had a good head for business as far as, you know, learning, spending and budgeting and things like that. So, but then I bartended and waitressed, and I like people. I'm a real people person. So I always liked Woodstock, and I always liked the artisans in Woodstock. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to go down to Woodstock on the weekends, and now I'm a huge fan of buying local. So I thought, let's bring a little bit of Woodstock to Catskill. Keep people here. keep people, you know, buying in green. Main Street was huge for me growing up. My mother, you know, every Saturday morning, we'd clean the house and then we'd go out. You okay?
Yeah.
It's like a domino effect when they fall. We clean the house and then we'd go down to Newbury's and have lunch, and then we'd, you know, shop around Main Street. And to this day, I'm you know, go to the Mayflower and have soda. And to this day, I just love Catskill Main Street. And
Do you see it coming back at this point?
Of course.
Yeah.
It's going to come back. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that we were on an upswing, and then it leveled off. The economy is, you know, it is what it is. I mean, we can't change that, and it's not, but I think people are getting tired of going to malls, and I think people are getting ready to support their local businesses. You know, I have huge support from local people. Usually right around the Parade of Lights.
Uh-huh.
Right after the Parade of Lights, it starts to get busy. And then the cats bring a lot of people into this town.
Yeah.
So thank goodness for the cats. So it starts right around Memorial Day. And then it really picks up after school lets out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it goes right up through October, mid-October.
And do you get a holiday rush around this time of
sure,
year?
Sure. Yeah, so we're open actually until 7 o'clock in the evening. So when people get off the freeway on their way home from work, they can stop and shop. So we're open until 7 o'clock, and then on Sundays from 12 to 5 through the whole month of December. I try to get here around 9 o'clock so I can do the ordering and the books and all that fun stuff. And then we open at 10 o'clock, and then in the course of the day, I'm here all day ordering. We just received some boxes, so we'll unpack the boxes and put out the merchandise. And I do all the ordering.
Mm-hmm.
I do all the ordering, so...
And then your day ends around after 7 or?
Probably, yeah. I normally close at 6, so I'm usually here till about 6:30 in the evening. But I have to say that the one thing, since day one that I opened, I've kept the same exact hours, and I think that that's very important for people that are going to go into business for themselves. You have to be consistent.
And what days are you closed?
In the summertime, I'm open 7 days. Mm-hmm. So I close, usually... I haven't decided if I'm going to close this winter, because last winter and the winter before, the only reason why I closed on Sunday was to clean.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seemed like I couldn't get anything cleaned, you know, with people coming in and, you know, so to clean the floor. But now I don't have the same floor over at Mahalo. I don't need to scrub that floor. Okay. So I have carpeting. So I may stay open on Sundays. I think I probably will stay open on Sundays.
So are you you must be exhausted by the end of the day.
No, not really. One thing I could say, I used to go out to dinner a lot more. I had more energy to sit and go out to dinner. And now I just, you know, can't wait to go home. And although I do some bookkeeping at home as well, and I do some ordering, I go online and look at the things that I'm going to order for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it's important to love what you do and do what you love.
So where are you going shopping for Christmas?
I'm staying right here. I'm going to go across the street and get some chocolate. I'm going to go across the street and get some antiques. I'm going to stay right on Main Street and all within Greene County. I'm going to go up to Hunter and buy some things from one of the ski shops up there. And I buy everything local. I haven't been in a mall in 6 years. Actually, 7 years, I think it is. I got road rage in Crossgates Mall parking lot one time. And I had to park like in the very last spot. And it was just crazy. I kept driving around and around, couldn't find a parking spot. And the mall was so far away and it was freezing cold. And I thought, you know what? I pulled into the parking spot and I said, I'm not staying here. And I drove away and I've never looked back.
Selling your history.
Bennett's my new tenant. He lives upstairs in a two-bedroom apartment with his girlfriend and his girlfriend's daughter. He's working at McDonald's. He wants to be a boxer. I thought his story was pretty good, especially when it came to the travails of working and keeping one's dreams alive. Well, what does Christmas mean to you?
Traditionally, I believe it's all about family. I personally believe that a lot of people have taken it more or less as, you know, who's going to buy me what, you know, what am I going to get, me, I. But I really believe that the true meaning of Christmas is all about family, love, and enjoying yourself and the time with the people that you love.
And how was it growing up with Christmas in your family?
Well, I grew up really poor, but my mother did the best that she could to make sure that Christmas was special every single year. Every year, you know, there's something different. Whether or not we got a lot of presents was, it had little meaning in my family, you know.
And would there, you'd have a tree and all of that?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Big nice tree and everything. We'd all get together and decorate it as a family, and that, to me, was a present in itself.
And did anybody in the family have to work on Christmas or through people?
Well, my mother, she had, like, jobs at Walmart and stuff like that when I was a young boy, and she was mainly a stay-at-home mom. You know, she was, I never knew my real father. He wasn't the nice, brightest guy in the world. He's kind of a bad guy. And she had married into somebody that was in the Navy. And I bounced around a lot. I mean, I've lived everywhere from Key West, Florida, Miami, Florida, you know, Apex, North Carolina, Kansas City. I've bounced around a lot, and I've never really been, I never really stayed in one school for longer than a year. It's pretty tough, you know, but it also, in a way, it broadens your horizons. You know, you see a lot of different places, you see a lot of different faces, and you meet a lot of people, and you basically get to see, you know, different elements, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was in a way it was special, but it had its negativity at the same time.
Where are you working right now?
I'm working at McDonald's as of right now.
And how long have you been working there?
I'd say about a month and a half now.
And what does that involve?
Well, basically, you know, I flip the burgers, I clean the grills. I'm primarily a nighttime closer, so I'm there from anywhere between 4 or 5 in the afternoon until about 11, between 11:30 and 12:30 at night.
How exhausting is it?
Honestly, The closing is it's kind of tough because we like to make sure that everything is up to perfection, everything is up to par. I mean, during the daytime, the work during the daytime though is not so bad. You know, just making the sandwiches, you have to be fast. It's a lot of repetition, you know, tedious things. But all in all, I mean, it's not exactly it's definitely not what I want to be doing with my life. But it's income as of right now, and you know, as you know, the economy is tough and the job market is kind of small.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have certain special skills and qualifications.
Had you done it before?
Had I worked fast food before? Yeah, I worked at Burger King for a little bit, but not too terribly long. But yeah, I worked at Burger King for a little bit.
Oh, here's is there a difference between working at Burger King and working at McDonald's?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's basically the same thing. Like I said, you know, just a lot of repetition, you know, making the sandwiches and, you know, cleaning. We like our customers to be completely satisfied, you know, service with a smile, always give a warm, friendly greeting. And all in all, Catskill McDonald's, honestly, is a, they're very, very on point with the way that they run their business.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that they feel that anything less than perfection is unacceptable, which is, you know, the way that you should have an outlook on the way that you run your business.
Where is your heart really lie? Where do your dreams lie?
Well, I was looking into professional boxing for a while. I boxed for 9.5 years. I mean, there's multiple things that I love. You know, I enjoy children. I love children with, you know, the utmost passion. And for a while, I wanted to eventually, when I was older, you know, open up my own boxing youth center, gymnasium type of deal for inner city youth to help keep them out of, how do you say, you know, just trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, I'm 22 years old. I still have a lot of life to live ahead of me. So the way I'm looking at it is everybody has a thing. Everybody has a thing. And I'm still trying to grasp my thing. But boxing has really been the only thing that I feel that I have thrived in.
Is that what brought you to Catskill?
No, love brought me to Catskill.
Okay.
Yeah, I came out here for love, basically, somebody that I love. And, you know, I lived in, I came out here from Buffalo, and, you know, just things were tough out there. I mean, I was working in a factory, Tetzel Bros Holiday Candy Factory in Tonawanda, which is a suburb of Buffalo. And, you know, just the poverty and the crime and, you know, it being the third poorest city in the United States. I believe it's either the third or the fourth. But just, it being an all-around bad aura, it has like a bad aura. And I figured, you know, fresh start is what's best for me. Mm-hmm. I come to Catskill and, you know, Catskill's actually a nice, quaint little town. And, you know, I've enjoyed it so far.
And did you know about the Customato Gym before coming?
As a matter of fact, I idolized Mike Tyson when I was a child. And I was always under the impression that he boxed. He was from Brooklyn. I was aware that he was from Brooklyn, like the Bronx area, you know, stuff like that. But I had known that he had traveled to a small town and started training with Kevin Rooney. And Kevin Rooney and Customato. And Customato had taken him under his wing. And you know, he was back and forth in a lot of trouble and everything like that, going back and forth to Brooklyn to Catskill, to Brooklyn to Catskill. And, you know, he even moved in with, you know, Customato. And, you know, once I came out here and I discovered the Customato gym where Floyd Patterson and Mike Tyson had trained, I was in awe. You know, I was like, I knew there was something special about this town. I just knew it. Mm-hmm. And
so are you training there?
Well, as a matter of fact, I had been trying to get in on several different occasions to train with Kevin Rooney. He's aware of my boxing history. Mm-hmm. I'm originally a middleweight fighter, but I've worked my way up to light heavyweight. But I have the ability to cut weight extremely well. So, you know, at any point in time, I can go from that 205 to 185. You know, that 175, 185 mm-hmm. type of transformation, you know what I mean? But Kevin Rooney has a lot of things going on in his life right now to where, you know, when him and I set a date on how we're going to do things and when we're going to do things and what we're going to work on, usually when I go to the gym, he's not exactly available. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have the experience that I feel like I require. I don't feel that I've beaten boxing. Like I said, I'm only 22 years old. There's a lot of things that I would love to learn, but the Customato style being absolutely one of them. I usually bump into Kevin on the street. And, you know, he'll come walking out of, like, the Getty over here at the corner of Spring Street. And I'll be like, hey, Kevin, you know, and he'll be like, hey, Mikey. You know, it took him a while to remember my name because he kind of has his own vices, you know. And I bump into him and everything. And he'd be like, hey, you know, when are you going to come and train? And I'll be like, well, give me a time and day. You know, I'd have to balance it out between my work schedule and when I had the availability to be there. Because I believe that if you're going to put your heart into something and you're gonna do something, you need to you do it. You don't half-ass it. You know, you're in there.
Yeah.
And when I'd go to the gym, duffel bag and heavy bag gloves ready, you know, and I'm ready to spar. I'm ready to do speed bag, cardio training, heavy bag training, jump roping, you know, weightlifting, all training regimens that I'm required to do in order to be a professional boxer. He's never there. So after a while, it just got to a point where I'm just like, you know, I really don't know how to go about it now, you know. You know, like I said, when I bump into Kevin, he'll be like, all right, I want you there Thursday at 4 o'clock. So I'll be there at like 3:30 waiting for the doors to open, mm-hmm. you know. I'll be there, duffel bag and heavy bag gloves ready to go. And, you know, they'll open up the door. No, Kevin's nowhere to be found. Or I've gotten there, you know, he'll tell me, be there around 4:35. So I'll get there at 5, I'll go in there, and I can't remember his name, but there's this really big guy that trains, and that is a trainer in there, and he's got he's got like a Mike Tyson tribal tattoo on the side of his face.
Yeah.
And, you know, he told me, he's like, look, you know, Kevin's not here, but, you know, if you'd like, you know, you could train with me. And I mean, I feel kind of feel like a jackass because I don't even remember the guy's name. He had told me his name, but I mean, I've boxed in a lot of different places. I boxed in Miami, Florida. I boxed in Virginia Beach. You know, I boxed in North Carolina for a little bit. I mean, I'm not the greatest boxer in the world. You know, and I've never fought pro competition. I've been in sparring competitions before. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's at like a local gymnasium, a local boxing gym. What they'll do is, they'll take like a 5-man tournament, basically 5 or 6-man tournament, and the sparring comes with, you know, the headgear and everything like that. And what sparring is basically just to touch up your skill. It's not a real boxing match, but it is full contact.
Mm-hmm.
And we would basically turn those sparring sessions into, you know, 2-round boxing matches, you know, 2 10-minute rounds. And, you know, I've won several of those, but I've never fought in professional competition. I've basically just been training and sparring for 9.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that if I ever do get into the boxing, into professional boxing where I'm in the ring prize fighting, I feel that I'd thrive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, I'm not the greatest boxer in the world. I had to stop for a while because I had gotten stabbed about 4 years ago. A friend of mine, he's a good friend of mine, and he was also my roommate, his girlfriend. And his girlfriend and him had been staying with me for a little bit. And, you know, it was a nice 2-bedroom apartment. And, you know, he'd been having money problems and everything like that, but he also had a really bad drinking problem. And I'm at work one afternoon, and I come home from work, and, you know, he's got his girlfriend choking her, like, till she's, like, purple in the face. And, you know, I just come walking to the door, and I'm like, oh, my God, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I'm like, what are you doing, Tyler? What are you doing? You know, and I ran up, and, you know, I grabbed him by the back of his shirt, and I turn him around, and I'm like, why are you choking her? You know, she's, like, 3 months pregnant. Yeah, so he took a swing at me, and I weaved out of the way, and I'm like, what? You're drunk, and he just starts throwing like haymakers at me. So, we'll just say that I had dealt with the problem, and as he's laying on the floor, I proceeded to turn around and help his girlfriend up. I mean, she's pregnant. I'm not just gonna leave her there unable to breathe. So I'm trying to help her up, help her get her bearings, and I ended up with a 5-inch blade of a buck knife in the back of my right leg right here.
Oh, God.
I don't know if you can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right in the back of my leg. And, I mean, honestly, Paul, I didn't even feel it, you know, until I looked down and I noticed the blade sticking out of my leg. And I was like, whew, you know, and I sat down and it happened in stages. Like, now I didn't notice it. I just felt like this warm sensation. And I looked down and I seen the blade, almost the handle, pretty much. And I ended up flushed. And I started seeing, like, you know, little spots and stuff like that. I got really, really dizzy. I ended up going to the doctors, and I was about this close to hitting an artery. So I would have bled out. You know, my life was saved. But I feel like good karma comes to everybody who deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give your best to the world, then the best eventually comes back to you. And I could have just, that evening, you know, I could have just let him choke his pregnant girlfriend, just go about my business, and just, it's not my concern, it's not my problem. That's how America is today, that's how the world is today. That's your problem, this is my problem, you deal with yours, and I'm going to deal with mine. But I personally believe that if there were more people that put forth the effort to care about one another and have each other's backs, whether you know each other or not, we're all humans.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm glad I did what I did that day, regardless of what it got me.
Did you stay friends with the guy?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I didn't even call the police on him, you know. Like I said, he was drunk, and I went to the hospital, and they asked me what happened, and I told him I got jumped. And like I said, I grew up with this guy, and I didn't want to let the fact that the alcohol had impaired his business, his ability to think reasonably and act reasonably. And all in all, he's a really good guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler, he's a really good guy, but I didn't want to let that affect, you know what I'm trying to say.
It must have prompted your decision to move eventually.
Oh, out of Buffalo?
Yeah.
Not really, but at the same time, at the same time, yeah, in a way, I mean, I look at all these things that I had been through and I had gone through, and personally, between you and I, the city of Buffalo has like this gigantic black cloud lingering over it, mm-hmm. just lingers, and I experienced nothing but chaos and turmoil when I lived in Buffalo, you know, and I decided that it was time for a change, you know, and I met the best person that I've ever known in my entire life and fell in love, and you know, I in a way, I kind of have an 8-year-old daughter, but at the same time, I don't have an 8-year-old daughter, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. But, you know, those two ladies are all I really have in this world. You know, Julia and Tara, it's all I have in this world. I don't have anything else besides these and my ability to work, you know, and a good positive attitude. I'm honestly one of the most calm people that you'll ever meet in your entire life. And all my friends say that, you know, the friends that I've made out here and people mm-hmm. that have known me from the past, they're always like, you know, you're a boxer and you come from rough neighborhoods and aren't you supposed to be, you know, aggressive? Like, you know, you would look at me and you would think, oh, he's probably got a temper. You know, it's not the case whatsoever. I'm one of the most calm, rational people you ever meet in your entire life. And I believe that people get further by being positive. You get better results, more positive results. If you're positive, you give your best to the world and the best comes back to you. If you give negativity and aggression towards the world, then that's what the world's going to give right back to you.
How does the holiday season kind of get reflected at McDonald's where you're working there? Does it get busier this time of year? Are you listening to endless Christmas music playing on the Muzak?
You know, it's really funny you say that because they continuously play Jingle Bell Rock and I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas and all these songs over and over again, and I'm in the back making McDoubles and I'm like, oh my god, you know, this is the repetition of the music. But it does get fairly busy. It's going to get fairly busy because winter break, Christmas break and stuff like that, that's when all the kids are going to be, you know, out of school and everything, and they're going to be flocking to McDonald's. But all in all, I'd say that it's going to be chaos. It's going to be chaos when school gets let out that last day before break.
Do you want to eat fast food after working in there for?
Absolutely not. And the thing is that I do like McDonald's chicken McNuggets and their French fries. Love them, but not only is it not good for my health being a boxer, but after just smelling it, you know, all day. Being in there all day, it's like, oh man, you know, like I'm looking at all this food, and you know, I do everything from, you know, cleaning to preparing the food to, you know, laying the food on the grill to cleaning the grill. So just after dealing with everything and just the constant smell, you know, I come home and I reek of it. I reek of, you know, French fries, and I'm like, oh man, I just can't. So then when I go in there, like it's to the point now where the other night Tara had gotten McDonald's. And, like, just the smell of it, I was like, oh, keep it away from me, you know? I don't want to smell that unless I'm at work, you know?
And so what's the plans for Christmas this year?
Oh, my plans?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to spend time with my family, you know? I believe that's like I said, that's the greatest gift you could get is being around your loved ones. And I'm going to sit upstairs and I'm going to drink eggnog and I'm going to watch my girlfriend's daughter open presents. And watch my girlfriend open presents and just hope to see smiles.
Uh-huh.
That's the greatest gift I feel that I could get, you know, is seeing other people that I care about happy on Christmas.
And is McDonald's open on Christmas Day, or does it shut down for a period?
I think we're closed. I honestly think that we're closed. But, I mean, then again, you know, who's gonna come into McDonald's on Christmas, you know?
Girl.
season change? Does it get busier this time of year?
It does. It gets insanely hectic, and a lot happens in a small time period. Summers are great. The falls are great with the leaf season. You know, every season has its great draws that make it busy and special. But just the glut of the holiday season is definitely something unto itself.
And are there specific wines and spirits that are that sell better than others?
Without a doubt, sparkling wine, champagnes have their day. And then a little more trophy or gift wines, you know, people who are getting special bottles for gifts and this and that. That definitely tends to happen. For example, there's a wine made in the Veneto, the area around Venice in Italy, called Amarone. It's a very sort of expensive grape where they let the grapes raisinate on mats, and then they press the juice from raisinated grapes, so you can guess that it would be much more laborious to do the whole thing, and it's definitely reflected in the price. And these are the type of things that people, you know, give as gifts for the holidays or something like that.
Do people come in with an idea of what they want? How much of a Virgil do you have to be with everybody?
It's a combination of what we just said in regard with, you know, there's gifting going on where you have to ask the right questions and see what world people are in and what they want and who's it for and what people get, you know, because there's, you know, you don't want to give someone something that they don't get, you know, so you really have to find your field and find the right selection within that. But in addition to that, there's the whole meal thing. I mean, any time of year where there are huge meals, a lot of parties where people are going to each other's houses to eat, it gets wacky for the wine stores wherever you are. So it's not only just, you know, gifting. There's just like, there are a lot of big holiday meals. So there's a lot of food pairing, et cetera. A lot of more multi-course type of things where you're worried about something, a wine first and then a wine with the meal and perhaps a port. You know, ports are something incredibly seasonal, I find.
Good morning, my darling. I'm telling you this to let you know that I'm sorry you're sick. Though tears of sorrow won't do you no good, I'd be your doctor if only I could. What do you want from the liquor store? Something sour or something sweet? I'll buy you all that your belly can hold. You can be sure you won't suffer no more. I'd swim the ocean or the deepest canal to get to you, darling, just to make you well. There's no place on earth I would hasten to go to cool the fever, this I want you to know. What do you want from the liquor store? Something sour or something sweet? I'll buy you all that your belly can hold. You can be sure you won't suffer no more. If only the doctor would hurry and show, there's quite a few places I know we could go. I was okay, but these words from you stating you sick made me sick too. What do you want from the liquor store? Something sour or something sweet? I'll buy you all that your belly can hold. You can be sure you won't suffer no more. Promise me, darling, that you won't die. I'll get all the medicine money can buy. Stick with me, baby, hold on and fight. Take a good rest, I won't prolong the flight. What do you want from the liquor store? Something sour or something sweet? I'll buy you all that your belly can hold. You can be sure you won't suffer no more. What do you want from the liquor store? Something sour or something sweet? I'll buy you all that your belly can hold. You can be sure you won't suffer no more.
I'm Michael, and we're Michael and Marion of Hudson Wine Merchants. We opened 8+ years ago, when very different time in the development of the town, and there's certainly a lot of people here well before us doing lots of, you know, interesting things, but compared to everything that's happening now, we definitely feel like it's a different world than when we started. We have the wine shop at 341 and a half Warren Street near Kamea and Swoon. And then upstairs we have a gallery space where we've had photography shows. We've even had plays that had been at La Mama, like, show, you know, performed here for nights. We've had readings that we do with Art O'Mai series with the Ledig House. We do stuff with the Small Press, if you know that whole thing. Yeah. So we have this sort of great space where we have photo shows and art shows, and sometimes we have wine tastings up there, and it's sort of part of the dynamic of the store, and that's called the third floor gallery.
And you live outside of Hudson?
Yeah, we lived above the store for the first few years as we got everything going, and the school bus would pick me up, and a little kid would come out of the liquor store, and you see all the little faces sort of eyeing, like, seeing like, what kid's coming out of the wine store? But now we are in the woods in Taconic near the Parkway, so about 15 minutes away, and I find it great to get away for a little bit because we are here, you know, 6 or 7 days a week most of the time anyway, so it's good to just get out and wake up in the woods.
You did not start off aimed at retail of any sort, did you?
No, we both did not, and so it's been sort of learning by fire. But that's sort of part of the challenge and fun of it. But what we didn't plan on was just the people who were here. I mean, we knew we liked the area. We were attracted to it. But just such a great group of people. And it's been really fascinating and exciting to be here. And I personally never thought I would fit in anywhere. So I'm very happy to feel like I have a place a bit, you know, where we're comfortable.
So how did you start off?
And we started off, Marion was curating a photography collection in the city. And I was... when we really wanted to move upstate when our daughter was born, we wanted to give her sort of a slower childhood. I was born in the city, and it's just a different thing to grow up, you know, in the woods and the country. And we moved up here. We literally drove from the hospital to a weekend house in Chatham, from the city to Chatham. And then we sort of raised her here, so I started teaching at local college. I was doing English literature, writing, or filling in wherever. And Marion was reverse commuting, going back into the city a few days a week. And that's when we opened the store.
And what was the process by which you came around to the idea of opening the store?
We were already obsessed with wine. We loved wine. We loved food. I grew up with sort of a father who's also passionate about wine. So it's just sort of not in a huge drinking way, but in a collecting and the right wine with the right meal sort of import to it. And so we just loved it, and we kept getting into it more and more. That was the direction we were going. And then the fact that Hudson didn't have a wine store, and this is what we loved, was, you know, just seemed like the perfect fit. And you had one of those feelings when you're just worried that someone else is going to do it first because you know it's this perfect, you know, timely idea. Mm-hmm. So we were really excited about it, and we did it. And it's just been unbelievably fun.
Did you have to find investment, or was there a pool of investment to pull from?
No, not at all. We got very lucky, and we happened to sell our house in Chatham, at, you know, one of the apexes of markets before it went down, and we literally, when we sold our house, that money helped us get things going.
What study was involved in kind of building up your own knowledge and kind of preparing for this business, and what keeps it going and keeps you... engaged?
I think we've been unbelievably lucky in terms of being engaged, because we're keeping the store interesting to us and finding new things and exciting things and following our passion. And we have a lot of great customers who really are along for the ride and love it. And it's such a great time for information and about food and wine and all that. And people are just caring more and more about how things are made and what goes in them and where they're from, etc. So it's really, you know, that way it's been incredibly timely. In terms of information, there were training courses I did, which were fun and, you know, fine. And then I also got lucky and I was mentored from someone who'd been early on in the business, you know, for 30 years and came from one of the first generation of importers, really one of the first notable importers in the history of wine, being from French wines or Italian wines being imported to the U.S. was named Bob Haas, a gentleman. I think around the 1950s, he started late 50s, early 60s. And the people who are really at the height of their game right now were all disciples of Bob Haas, people like Kermit Lynch, etc. And the person who I learned from was one of these people, who was actually Bob Haas's personal assistant for years. And I would go around tastings, and the things I learned were not things that you typically learned at informational courses where you take your course in the city with people. These were like the little tricks people do, or how they fix bad vintages, or what type of mistakes that the winemaker makes are going to make the bottle go bad on the shelf, so you want to avoid buying it in the first place. So rather than smelling a wine and necessarily adding the adjectives that you hear all the time, you smell a wine and you're more in tune with the winemaker's choices. Oh, what type of barrel did they use? What type of soil is this? If there are mistakes, is there bacteria that's now in the wine because their barrel work was sloppy? Is there secondary fermentation going on where they left sugar and the wine is going to have bubbles, which is a defect, as opposed to the laborious task of putting gorgeous, elegant small bubbles in champagne, which is a much different thing. So there are a lot of particulars, and you know, there are a lot of things that can be done or not done to wine. And it's just, there's always stuff to know, but no matter how much you get into it or talk about it, it's also really fun and sensual and real in the end, where you open it and you enjoy it, and you know, it's not, you know, just theoretical.
So. Have you started traveling to the various wine areas that you're?
I do. I don't want to over glorify things. I mean, this is retail, and when I'm not there, sometimes I should be there. You know, and the people, you know, certain people, you know, want you to be there and expect you to be there, and I love being there. But yes, I've definitely done trips to Piedmont, which has been amazing. Of course, Burgundy in France is amazing, even to lesser-known areas like the Jura, which is sort of in between Burgundy and Switzerland, which is more like farmland, which has some of the wines being made with the most character these days that are less sort of globalized or, you know, homogenized in a way. So, you know, all over, wherever I can go and whenever I go, it's very exciting. But it's not necessarily all the time.
And what's involved in the relationship with your clientele, or how do you even term them, your patrons or those who?
Yeah, I mean, it's just people who love talking about food and wine and trying things. People who are in the neighborhood and find it pleasant to come in. There are all sorts. We have a wine club now, which has really been amazing. We're even though it's a little area in a wine club, it seems like a big commitment with, you know, monthly buying or whatever. I think we have near 100 people in it now, and these are people who really are, you know, coming in regularly and finding out about wines and care about new wines and reading about wines and learning about wine as they enjoy it. So we have a nice community with that also.
How do you center the area, and how has that area shifted over these 8 years?
In terms of Hudson specifically, it just seems to be filling in with exciting things. That's the only way to say it. And in terms of the area, I just keep on, I keep on finding myself surprised that the people who keep coming here and how exciting it is, and the people who are coming are exciting, the people who are here already, there's something exciting. You know, it's just really, there's something happening, whatever it is, people can articulate it better than me, but the area just really seems to be filling in, and it has its own sort of feel to it, and it's just pretty, it's pretty great to be here.
And what's your typical work day for you and Marianne these days?
Well, we have an 11-year-old daughter, so we're getting her to the bus, so we're up early. And some mornings the store, normally, on a normal week, the store might not be open till 11. But at the holidays, you know, the moment you get in here, you dig in as soon as you can. And then you stay as late as you can and just do everything. And you just tell yourself, you know, it's a three-week, you know, it's a three-week drill. A lot happens.
And is there a specific moment where it just kind of lets off, like after New Year's would it be, or?
I think even making it to Christmas is really amazing. New Year's is still a busy time, and this, you know, there's a lot going on, but just, it seems like the real intensity of the push is Christmas.
I first got to know you, you were fully concentrated on writing, and is that still a part of the mix, or is the writing going on in your head as in observations, or does this consume and fulfill the creative side of
it? I'm still trying to work out time to do it, so I snuck away to a retreat not far from Hampshire, you know, that area of Massachusetts, Amherst and all that. So I'm still trying to work that out with sneaking away and finding time, but I put it all aside for things like the holidays. You know, you really have to have your eye on the ball. But in normal life and stuff like that, it's great to be able to sort of begin to work out. You know, to
and separate. How does that then kind of change? Does it replenish something when you come back in to the store? Then does it?
Yeah, it's part. I mean, it's part of a whole healthy balance. I imagine when it's happening. And if it, you know, when you are sectioning your time and you have these different elements of yourself going, it definitely makes for a healthy balance, you know, overall. So, but, you know, for small periods not to have that is what you do. So.
Was there a history of any sort of business of this sort in your family or in Marianne's family, or is this a first?
This is the first, and many people in my family were shocked. Shocked that I was in the store talking to people I didn't know, etc. It was not the person that they knew.
Wonderful things. You know, when I look at a beautiful day, I say,
let's
God is happy. Do you mind if I sing one time?
Make this Christmas.
I say it's happy because the birds are tweeting, the sun is shining, the wind is blowing, the breeze, the leaves are flying, everybody feels nice.
Music this month included the fabulous Christmas Wrapping by The Waitresses, Shopping by Pet Shop Boys, Big Mac by The Village People, Sorry You're Sick by the great late Ted
Hawkins. So one more time, I'll say.
And then James Brown's Let's Make Christmas Mean Something This Year. This has been The Work Show. This is Paul Smart. Look forward to you in the new week. Keep on working.
One more time, I want you to sing one more time. Now let's make our next year be as nice as this year. Now Christmas gotta be the kind of a Christmas that we remember a long time ago. You remember when everybody used to look forward to Santa Claus? You'd want to know what you're gonna have the next day. You couldn't wait until Christmas morning and jump up. But that's the morning that you wouldn't go to your table. You'd go straight to your little sack, hanging on the mantle, over the fireplace. Let's
make this Christmas.
No.
This year. Let's
make Christmas.
Make this Christmas.
Father, thank you so much now. No, I just enjoy this. And I really can't find enough words that would really make me express myself, the good feeling that I have. But I want to say thanks. Thanks, God. And now, let's make Christmas the kind of a Christmas that we remember. You know, you made Christmas very, very beautiful for me in my past years. But let's make this Christmas good for everybody. The kind of a Christmas that Mom, Dad, Granddad,
let's
make Christmas.
Make
old fashioned way. No, 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 no. Make it a beautiful,
make this Christmas
a lovable,
mean something,
enjoyable Christmas, nah, nah, nah,
this year.
Oh, that's a violin playing. That's a violin playing now. So good. Come on.
Make this Christmas.
Hey, hey, hey.
Something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This year.
Yeah, yeah. No. Thank you.
Make this Christmas.
I'll see you. I'll see you. Christmas morning. If I don't, you see Santa Claus.